This is the Rundown. Hosted by Luke Lipinski. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Live from the Auction Community Studios for the next 2 hours. Luke Lipinski here with you. Mitch Vareldis is behind the glass. It is the Rundown. We got a busy show tonight.
Busy.
Wow, it's more busy than I thought.
It's busier than busy.
We're going to talk to Kellen Olsen a little bit, get a bit of an NBA Finals preview. I think we have like 7 more days before that series actually starts, but I'm looking forward to it, even though we knew Golden State was going to be there all along. Want to talk about the ASU stuff. I love this addition of Marvin Lewis, even if he doesn't do that much. I just love the symbolic addition of Marvin Lewis, but we're going to start with the D-backs. Pretty big weekend for them. To the point where there's going to be storylines that evolve over the course of this week. I know Burns and Gambo had a poll out of which development over the weekend potentially concerns you the most, and the Luke Weaver injury, it has to be the answer, right? I mean, this guy has essentially been your number two starter. I know he was supposed to be your four. He moved up to your three when Zach Godley disappeared, but he's been more reliable than anybody in that rotation other than Zach Greinke, and if he is out for any considerable amount of time, I don't know how they can hang around. I don't want to doubt them. I mean, they're 2 games above 500. We were saying this stuff before the season began. How can they hang around without Corbin and Goldschmidt and to a lesser extent AJ Pollock? And they have hung around. But part of the reason they've hung around has been Luke Weaver, a major part of the reason. If you start to stack the players that have stepped up this season that maybe have exceeded expectations and put them in a position where here we are at the end of May and they are still very relevant, he's got to be at the top of the list, doesn't he? I mean, Zach Greinke's been outstanding, but you expect that from Zach Greinke. You're paying him $32 million a year or whatever it is this year. And Christian Walker was really good for a while, but he's hitting like 176 over the last month, so that's not really going to get the job done. Adam Jones was really good to start the year. He's still exceeding expectations, but he's trailed off. Luke Weaver hasn't trailed off. And if you lose him for any length of time, and he's going to, I would assume, miss some time. What is the official word right now is a right forearm strain, and they're looking for a second opinion, I believe. I had it written down here. Yes, right.
Yeah, it's second opinion.
So Torrey Lovello was on with Burns and Gambo just a couple hours ago, and he addressed the Luke Weaver situation.
The time out that he's missing right now is not good. It's not favorable. We know that. But we want to have the best possible outcome, and hopefully that means as little time down as possible, and that's what I can give you guys right now.
Now, this was the update he was able to give just in terms of where Weaver is at this moment. Like I said, this is about 2 hours ago.
He's on the DL. He is going to be a miss, and we're still getting down to that point the number of days missed or how much time, and it's actually the official diagnosis. So, you know, I did say that it was a flexor strain. I'm still getting information. We're still trying to identify some of the second opinions that we're going to get.
This one hurts. The Diamondbacks have had their fair share of injuries this season, and they've had the guys that departed in the offseason. But this is the one I don't think you can afford.
Does this hurt more because it hurts the pitching staff, or does it hurt because it's just another injury when somebody's actually playing well on this team?
I think it hurts. I mean, both. I mean, you don't have a lot of consistency out of any of your pitchers. Think about this. Out of all the pitchers on the roster, starters, relievers, whatever, who do you trust other than Zach Greinke?
Luke Weaver.
Who else? I mean, honestly, who else?
Maybe Greg Holland and a little bit Yoan Lopez, but he's young, so he just needs a bit more time. But other than that, that's it. But you have to get to Greg Holland.
That's the thing. I hear what you're saying about Greg Holland, but things have to go well for you to get to the point where you're using Greg Holland. Like, I mean, I trust Robbie Ray to a certain extent. I just know I can't trust him for much of the game. But when he's out there, I mean, Robbie Ray's fine. But you know, Merrill Kelly's your fifth starter. He's never pitched in the majors. You can't count on him for that much. Zach Godley doesn't look like Zach Godley. Archie Bradley, I don't know what happened to Archie Bradley. We'll get into that later on in the show. Hirano hasn't been good. He's just not getting as much attention for not being good as Bradley because he's not as outspoken as Bradley. I mean, I think that's a lot of it. Also, Bradley has been really bad. Matt Andrees, I mean, you're going to lean on Matt Andrees. Like, you start to go through this list of maybe I trust Taylor Clark a little bit.
I trust him a lot more than anyone on the roster right now.
But he's made two major league starts. I mean, in terms of, hey, this guy's on the mound, whether it's to start the game, it's the seventh inning, whatever it is, I trust Zach Greinke. And then second, I trust Luke Weaver. And then after that, I trust certain guys in certain situations. But I'm not really that comfortable with anybody at this exact moment other than those two, and one of those two is now injured.
Unfortunately, the most comfortable we can get, it seems, is if Greinke can go eight innings with a small lead and Holland closes it out.
Yeah.
But that's it. And that's never going to happen because Greinke either gets blowouts or he throws too many pitches by the time the seventh inning rolls around and Torrey pulls him. Like what happened yesterday, except more so his spot in the order came up.
Here's some more from Lovello on Weaver.
This is a situation where we're going to just work through methodically, get as much information as we possibly can with the right people, put the decision moving forward in the right hands, which ultimately will be Luke's, and we want to get as much information as possible.
I mean, look, it's a delicate situation. This guy is a part of your future. He's only 25. You didn't just get Luke Weaver for a playoff push this year. He has already exceeded expectations. I wish Mike Hazen were here right now, because Mike Hazen obviously had high expectations for him in the first place because he traded for him. But I wonder if he expected Weaver to come in even and have a 3.03 ERA through the first, 2 months of the season?
So yesterday,
yes,
when we did the fill-in show with Andy and Spencer, there was a question that we kept asking. And it was, do you miss Paul Goldschmidt?
Is my mic on? Oh, okay.
No. The first part of the show, before we knew Luke Weaver was heading to the IL, it seemed kind of obvious. Like, no, we've got Luke Weaver and he's pitching well. Carson Kelly is his catcher, and that's going to be a good thing going forward.
Yeah.
But then when you find out about the injury, and Goldschmidt is just a trustworthy bat in the order, maybe he's slumping in May, but he always slumps in May. Would you rather still have Goldschmidt back?
See, this is where it gets tough. I mean, look, if Luke... I hope he's not out for a long time. If he's out for a long time, then obviously, yes. But that's the sort of thing where I'm not going to look back. Look, when that trade happened, I didn't like it. And I think I outlined the reasons why I didn't like it at the time. But I do like the addition of Luke Weaver, and he has certainly exceeded my expectations. I'm not going to look back now and be like, oh, that was a bad trade on the D-backs' part. Even if Weaver's hurt, they still managed to get something for Goldschmidt. And my whole thing at the time was, I don't want to trade Goldschmidt just for the sake of trading him. And we're going to talk about Zach Greinke a little bit later on in the show, but spoiler alert, I don't want to trade Zach Greinke just for the sake of trading him. Now, the D-backs did a good job getting a return for a guy that they weren't going to keep if Luke Weaver ends up being this guy for years and years. If he's not this guy because he got hurt, that's not on the D-backs. That's just bad luck. If he's not this guy because this is just a flash in the pan and he's out for 2 weeks or whatever and he comes back and he just isn't very good and he trails off and he's mediocre and he's a number four starter. I mean, when the trade was made, he was supposed to be the, quote, number four starter, unquote. I have no interest in trading Paul Goldschmidt for a number four starter. But if Luke Weaver is going to pitch the way he has, he's not a number four starter. He's a number two starter. And you know, we'll see what we get out of Carson Kelly as well. So to be determined, but I'm not going to hold it against the Diamondbacks that Weaver's hurt because that's completely out of their control. All right, I can already tell you we're probably going to talk about this more than once during the show tonight because I didn't leave a whole lot of time to talk about it right here. But the Marvin Lewis addition for ASU, just joining Herm Edwards' staff, it's somewhat unclear what his actual definitive role is going to be. What is he? He's an advisor, essentially, a special advisor. Man, you're just adding another guy that has a ton of NFL experience. The head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals for a decade and a half. And he's a guy that, even if he doesn't do that much for you, like on a day-to-day basis, you're just adding another NFL mind to your college program. So, and I know everybody was down on this move, on the Herm Edwards hire when it first happened. I know like 90% of people were. That night, we were doing the rundown a half hour basically after the news broke that was pretty much the direction ASU was going to go. And we just took calls for 2 hours. We never take calls. We took calls for 2 hours. And I would say about 9 out of 10 people didn't like the idea of it. Now, to be fair, that was right in the infancy of it. We didn't know any of the details. I didn't love it. until they went out and hired Danny Gonzalez. And then it sort of changed my perception of, okay, you got a really good defensive mind in here. This isn't just a publicity stunt. Now, I love it now. I mean, by the time the season started last year, I loved it because you have that charisma in your head coach. It doesn't make you Alabama, but ASU is realistic with what they are, or they were, you know, a year ago. They were realistic with the fact that, okay, there's the upper echelon, there's the Alabamas and the Georgias and Oklahoma, and there's those four or five teams that seem to be hovering around national championship consideration every year. And then there's just all the other major colleges from the power conferences. So ASU is doing something to separate themselves from all those other colleges in the power conferences. That doesn't mean they're going to be the best team of all those other colleges. But you want to talk about getting recruits and standing out. Herm's the headliner, obviously. It's not like Marvin Lewis has the personality that Herm Edwards has. Marvin Lewis has a lot more recent experience at the NFL level. And, you know, if you're talking about building a program to sort of be a feeder system into the NFL, which is a great way to get recruits, if you can tell kids legitimately they're going to have not only a shot to make it to the NFL, but they're going to have access to guys that know all the little details you need to be focusing on even when you're in college. That's a huge step up from most programs.
This is interesting.
Yes.
We've got a college team in town that is recruiting a bunch of former NFL coaches, players, etc. Like Antonio Pierce has been doing recruiting and now Marvin Lewis.
Yeah.
And we have an NFL team.
That's a bunch of college guys.
Exactly. Yeah. Is that weird?
It is weird. It's very much weird. So much so.
Why is it that way?
I'm saying sentences that don't make sense. It's very much weird. It's just the way it is. I mean, talk about the craziness of what you just said. And we focused on that a couple months ago. But I know most people listening are fans of the Cardinals, and a pretty good percentage of that are probably ASU fans as well. If you could only be a fan of one right now, which one would you rather be a fan of? Which one do you feel better about the direction of?
I'm a homer, so ASU, obviously.
Okay. Just for the record, when you flash the fork, people can't hear that.
No, of course they can't hear it. But I'm also not a Cardinals fan, and I didn't like the move to go for Murray anyway.
Okay, see, that's what I'm saying. I guess take your bias out of it just for a second. Like, if you look at the situation, would you rather be a... Do you feel better about an NFL team that's thinking outside the box, that will probably be exciting but may only win five games? Or are you excited about a college team that, you know, it's not going to challenge for the national title this year or anything, but neither is the NFL team. But you are doing something different in a way that is very forward-thinking.
Give me that one.
I love this addition.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the fact that you've got Marvin Lewis and Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce. And, again, it's – You can sell kids on the promise or recruits on the promise of, you know, if you come here, you're going to learn from guys that know what it takes to succeed in the NFL. You can counter and say, well, Marvin Lewis never won a Super Bowl. That's fine. But he knows what it takes for defensive players at the NFL level to succeed. He's been to the playoffs at the NFL level. He's not trying to get ASU's next recruit into the AFC championship. He's just trying to show them the ins and outs of what it takes day to day, daily life. I mean, we're going to play a clip of the Herm Edwards interview later on that he had with Burns and Gambo today. And Herm talks about how when he first met N'Keal Harry, he just gave him a basically an NFL size playbook and was like, you're going to need to know this, N'Keal, eventually. Now, this is before the season even started. N'Keal looked at it and was like, really? that's huge. Yeah. And that's the sort of benefit you're getting, not just from ASU, but it is the additional benefit you're getting from ASU as opposed to a lot of the other programs in the Pac-12. And also, all these guys have connections around the NFL. It's not that, hey, we've got Marvin Lewis, so if you're a decent linebacker, you're going to get drafted. But it is like, hey, we've got Marvin Lewis. If you're a decent linebacker, he might be able to get you into a pro day if you're a fringe guy. He knows this guy with this team or whatever. It's just extra connections. And connections are never a bad thing in most businesses, but certainly in the world of sports. All right, when we come back, we are going to check in with Stephen A. Smith because I can't make sense of what he's saying. I think it's possible he short-circuited earlier today. But he's talking about the Lakers, and that really is probably more fun for Suns fans right now than the Suns themselves. We'll get into that next. It's The Rundown. Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Back here on The Rundown, Luke Lipinski with you. Mitch Vareld is behind the glass. You can always tweet into the show at Rundown987. You can tweet me at Luke Lipinski. You can tweet Mitch at...
at SDMB Journalist. I know it's complicated.
It is complicated.
I know.
I would not have guessed that.
I made it like 5 years ago when I was just starting my personal accounts on Twitter because, you know, we all took that ASU
accounts?
Class, right?
Like multiple accounts, like you're Brian Colangelo?
Not like those kind of multiple accounts, okay. But like NSFW accounts versus I'm trying to build a career accounts.
I want to see the other accounts that you have.
No.
Too. No? You can tweet into the show. We probably should put up this poll question because I'm kind of wondering. If you are a Phoenix Suns fan, right this exact moment, what interests you more, the Suns or the Lakers? Because the Lakers are more enjoyable. Like, there's a lot going on with the Suns. You got Monty Williams. You know, we talked about this a lot last week. There's some reason for cautious optimism that maybe they are starting to turn in the right direction. And you hear some of those comments last week from Monty Williams and Jerry Colangelo about Robert Sarver. And it's like, okay, maybe we're starting to take a step in the right direction. You got the draft coming up. I know you wanted the first pick or at least the second pick. You're picking sixth. It's not the same, but you're still picking top 10. There's some reason to be intrigued by the Suns. But man, it is fun to pay attention to the Lakers right now because they are an absolute dumpster fire. There's really no other way to describe it. I've often wondered where that term came from.
But there is another way to describe it.
Is there?
And we have someone who's described it perfectly.
Well, okay, so here's the setup. If you go to ESPN.com today, the main story is inside the Lakers' culture of fear, distrust, and anxiety. And you will read it, and you'll read it, and you'll enjoy it if you're a Suns fan. It's about 900,000 words long, so just be ready to carve out a good week of your life to read it. But it's entertaining. It is. And it makes you happy that it's not your team. I mean, I guess if you're a Lakers fan reading it, you know, you're whatever. The Lakers have a great history and all that, and they'll turn it around at some point, but man, do they seem lost right now. So that's That's the story that's out. That's the main story on ESPN.com today. Then there's Stephen A. Smith, and I don't really understand what he's mad about. I know he's always mad, but typically I understand why he's mad, even if I don't agree with him. This is a portion of his comments today.
I'm not happy about it one bit. I got better things to do with my damn time. Better things to do. ESPN.com decides to come out with a story on a day that Magic and the crew are going to be here. Do I like the fact that I have to deal with it today? Hell no. Go check it out on ESPN.com.
What a ringing endorsement. Now, this goes on for a while, and maybe we'll play portions of it throughout the show. But
we just got to let it sit there like a music bed.
You want me here? I'll let him start going.
Obviously, it's very, very important.
Okay, now I'll just go ahead and pot him down for a little bit. He's back there talking. We'll pot him back up in just a second. Don't worry. Stephen A. is going to go on for a while. But just the genesis of this is that he's mad at ESPN.com, where he works, for running this story today when he's got something set up with Magic or whatever. And look, the story doesn't paint Magic in a favorable light, but it doesn't paint anybody with the Lakers in a favorable light. I don't know how you can paint anybody with the Lakers in a favorable light right now. Oh, sorry, hold on. Steven's still going.
That's basically what picture they're trying to paint. Magic Johnson, what that small that y'all see on television all over the.
So again, I'm gathering that most, and I'm just letting this run. It goes on for a while. It sounds like Stephen A. is mad at ESPN. Now maybe this is a publicity thing. I don't know. Maybe it's let's take the other angle to this story and give it that much more hype as we release it because it's a pretty good story on the Lakers. Oh, he's still going. Okay, well, sorry, Stephen A. I might be the only person in the world with the power to cut off Stephen A. Smith because I can just pot it down right now, but.
He wasn't pleasant to work for. That smile wasn't always there. He was demanding, and he wouldn't tolerate mistakes. Oh, my God! Let's get the axe!
I don't know how he does this every day. Can you imagine, like, doing anything with that much intensity every day? He's still going. I'm not hitting stop and start on this computer right here. He's still back there. He's still going. This is all one piece. And I think he's mad at ESPN because the Lakers are dysfunctional.
Magic Johnson.
Yeah, okay. I had to cut it off at that point. I can't take any more. We're around 2 minutes. He still goes. The point is, if you're enjoying the Lakers melting down, you should go read this article on ESPN.com and just sit back and enjoy this. If you're a Suns fan, you've earned it over the last 9 years. You don't have a ton to cheer about with your team. I understand that. But isn't it fun to push your rivals down a little bit more? I mean, it's not... You know, Magic was on ESPN. It was last week with Stephen A. Smith, I think, where he talked about how Rob Pelinka was basically stabbing him in the back.
Oh, yeah.
You start to read through this, and it's like it's scouts. They're all the work they do being minimized right before the draft. It's Pelinka versus Magic. I mean, there's a reminder that LeBron alienated pretty much all of his younger teammates, who, by the way, are still on the team because he alienated them because he tried to get them dealt for Anthony Davis. I mean, Luke Walton was just cut out. Coaches turning them down. The L.A. Clippers are undeniably a better job than the L.A. Lakers right now, both if you're a coach or a potential free agent. Let that sink in for a second. That's still the Lakers' town. They'll ultimately take it back. But if you're a free agent, we're talking about Kawhi Leonard. Oh, he might want to go to L.A. to play for the Clippers, not the Lakers. That is the sort of thing that is just absolutely almost unheard of.
Small!
Oh, there's more Stephen A. All right. I said we were going to talk about Zach Greinke, and we are absolutely going to, because he has been just utterly dominant for the D-backs this season, and he continues to get the job done. And there is certainly speculation out there. Tim Kirkjian was the exact quote, I believe, talking about how if you're the Diamondbacks, he's not the only one, but he was the main one, talking about how the most recent one, I should say. For the Diamondbacks, teams are going to come calling for Zach Greinke. They just are. I mean, look at what he has done this season, and then transpose that on what he has done his entire career, so you know this isn't just a flash in the pan. Zach Greinke is a Hall of Famer, and he's pitching like a Hall of Famer right now. Teams are going to come knocking on the Diamondbacks' door asking about him. I thought Gambo put it really well earlier today. He's put it really well a few times, actually. Greinke's the sort of guy you could trade for at the deadline if you are the Yankees or the Astros or whoever's coming out of the National League, the Cubs, Dodgers, whoever, that can put you over the top. He can step in on a World Series contender and be the number one starter. How often do you see a World Series contender go out there and trade for their number one guy? A lot of times they'll trade for another team's number one, but they make him like their number three.
Who would you rather have, given that there's rumor mills around him and then Madison Bumgarner?
Greinke.
If you're a competitor, you'd rather have Greinke.
Right now? Yeah. Greinke's pitched out of his mind this year. You'd rather have Bumgarner?
I mean, this is kind of the Homer answer in me. I don't want him to get traded at all.
Who, Greinke?
No, Bumgarner.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to see Greinke get traded either, honestly. I don't think that he's going to help the D-backs in any sort of way because he's got a lot of money on his deal. He's getting past 35, and in this new age of baseball, nobody likes to take on big contracts with such a high age.
But what is it, two more years after this at like 31, 32 million?
Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, you are talking about, look, if I'm a team that's looking to trade for Zach Greinke, I'm getting a guy who has a 2.78 ERA on the year despite a horrible start in game one of the season. If you take that out, he's given up more than three runs in a game once back on April 9th. He hasn't done it since then. A lot of the games he pitches six, seven, sometimes eight innings, 7 2/3, I guess, is the most he's gone this year. He's done it a couple times, typically giving up zero or one earned run. If you go out and you trade for him, you're going to give yourself a very good chance to win the World Series this year. If you're a contender, I mean, if I was some mid-tier team, I wouldn't trade for him. But you get a guy that can push you over the top this year, and he's still going to be good next year and probably effective the following year. Now, this is why I was saying Gambo, I thought, described this really well. It's sort of like the Goldschmidt situation for me. I know a lot of people just look at that contract like, okay, you got to move him, get some players. I'm not moving Zach Greinke just for the sake of getting players. If you are a team that's going to contend for a title and I'm giving you Zach Greinke, you're probably going to get to the World Series unless he gets hurt or something. But if you just add Zach Greinke to a roster of a team that is a World Series contender, you're probably going to get there because we all know the value of a starting pitcher that can be dominant in a playoff series. And again, if you're a contending team, you're adding Greinke to a pitching staff that's already good. So even if he struggles in like one start, you're probably still fine. So if I'm the Diamondbacks, I'm open to dealing him if I'm getting legit pieces back. But I'm not dealing him just for the sake of dealing him. Not at this point. He's too good.
So in contrast to Goldschmidt, do you consider the pieces that the Diamondbacks got for him worthwhile?
For Goldschmidt?
Yeah.
I think the jury's still out on that, right? I mean, Weaver's, I really like what I've seen from Weaver, but it's been 2 months. So I think the jury's still out. I know everybody's excited about Carson Kelly, but I need to actually see it. But, you know, all things considered, I think it certainly seems like they got a decent return, all things considered. Those guys aren't going to equal Paul Goldschmidt, but if you knew you weren't going to be able to sign him anyway, I just don't like the trade because of what Goldschmidt meant as just the face of this team. But I like what I've seen from Weaver, and I'm intrigued by what Carson Kelly could potentially provide. All right, I'm also kind of intrigued by the NBA Finals, even though Golden State's going to win. But the job Kawhi Leonard and the Toronto Raptors did in the East, specifically to Milwaukee, has made this pretty exciting. And it starts on Thursday. When we come back, we'll talk to our own Kellen Olsen, get his thoughts on that series, the Lakers, and the rest of the NBA next. It's The Rundown. Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, Luke Lipinski back here with you. It is The Rundown. We are joined by the one and only Phoenix Suns guru and sometimes NBA guru, Kellen Olsen. I haven't spoken to you since the weekend. How are you holding up with no more Giannis in the playoffs?
Oh, I'm okay.
Are you?
I think it hurts more that I thought Milwaukee had the best chance of beating Golden State. That's what I was kind of rooting for, but
yeah.
With the way Giannis went out, I'm not really too sad about it.
It wasn't great.
We've been hyping him up a lot on the show the past couple of months, and if people were solely going off of that, they were kind of probably disappointed in the way he played in games 5 and 6.
I don't think we were the only ones hyping up Giannis.
No.
Let's start there. What did Toronto do that was so effective? Where it's not like they took him out of the game, but it was just they slowed him down and also sort of forced him to be the one to beat them, and the Milwaukee lost 4 in a row. I mean, team had the best record in the NBA this year.
Yeah, Toronto's just scheme, and it was pretty simple because Giannis is actually a pretty simple player. He just likes to get to the basket, and if you can collapse on him and allow him to not get within like 6 to 8 feet of the rim and then force him to kick out to shooters. But the thing is, Giannis has evolved and knows when to kick out to shooters. But Toronto was so good at timing it to where, okay, we collapse on Giannis. Now we go back out to our shooters. So the guys that were actually there to trap Giannis are already back out on their man. And they kind of perfected that defense. And that's part of the defense that makes this Warriors matchup intriguing without Durant, at least, because it's such a huge dynamic of their offense to have Kevin Durant. So without it, it simplifies their offense a little bit, at least. And that's where you look at the way Toronto defended Giannis and Milwaukee especially, and that's the reason they won that series and a reason why a lot of people are looking at this series. And I know quite a few smart basketball people who are picking Toronto to actually win this series.
Really?
Because of the way they defended in that series. And the way, I think it more so just has to do with the fact Kawhi is Kawhi.
Yeah, but Kawhi is Kawhi.
But having that defense behind him is really important and is something where you can rely on that defense to come when Kawhi is playing at that level and maybe no one else is going to not match him from Toronto, but at least help him out offensively. Maybe Kyle Lowry is going to have a night or two, but I'm not there. Are you? You sound like you're not there.
No, I'm not there.
Toronto had a lot of random things too, like Fred VanVleet suddenly couldn't miss for 3 straight games. Yeah. Norman Powell was all of a sudden pretty solid. There were a lot of things in that series that not necessarily fluky, but just things that went right for them that I don't think will happen in this round.
I will openly, I mean, there are people with great basketball minds that know a lot more about basketball or specifically the NBA or are better at making predictions than I am. But I when it comes to the Warriors, I think sometimes people that are closer to it overthink it. I wouldn't be shocked if they won. I think Kawhi will help Toronto steal one, but I'd still take Golden State in 5. But maybe you've sort of already touched on this, but I just want to make sure I'm hearing you right. I know that all season long you thought Milwaukee had the best chance against Golden State. Now with the way that series played out, do you feel like Toronto actually probably has a better chance than Milwaukee would have?
I'm not sure. Playoff series are very unpredictable in the way that they look by game 5 and game 6. You would have never predicted that Giannis was looking the way he did in game 6, especially just with how tentative he was.
Yeah.
That was a very big series where it was like, oh, this is the first time they've gone this deep into the playoffs. And a lot of moments like that for him. And yes, they've reached those stages before to a certain extent, but they were ahead in that series. They lost the double overtime game. That's something we talked about last time on the show. And to me, I think that what Toronto presents is Kawhi. I think Kawhi is undoubtedly a top 5 player in the league. I think he has arguably been the best player in the postseason right now with the way that he is playing. And I think that if you have that along with what I just talked about earlier, which is the defense behind him, I think you have a chance against really any team, no matter if it's the Warriors in their current state with or without KD. And I think having KD out adds a lot more chance for them, in my opinion.
Talking to Kellen Olsen, the move that Toronto made, I mean, it was certainly risky to trade DeMar DeRozan, and that wasn't the whole deal, but essentially DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, knowing he might leave at the end of the season. He still might. But now you're in the NBA Finals. I don't think anybody's going to hold it against them if they lose to Golden State. I think most people will look and say, okay, you went for it and you at least got to the finals for the first time in franchise history. Do you think that may encourage other teams to sort of go all in when conventional wisdom might suggest against it in the future?
Oh, you just mean with the way Toronto acquired
just
Kawhi?
The way that most people last year were like, you can't. Can you really do that? That's not the safe move. Do you think more teams will take risks now?
I think they always will when the opportunity presents itself. I think it was the perfect time for Toronto to reset the DeRozan-Lowry backcourt, and what they got was a guy in Kawhi who I think one of the things with Devin Booker in Phoenix that I've realized in the past 18 months is that up to 2 years ago, everyone in the NBA was on pace with the people watching the Suns every night and realizing how good he is. It's just the public perception in the media and everything kind of puts it behind. Is he really good? All that kind of stuff. Kawhi has had this rep in the league for a really long time, and I think he's just kind of been underrated, especially this season playing in somewhere like Toronto where it wasn't getting a lot of attention nationally, and just him not even really being in the MVP race that much, despite the season that he was having and him taking the games off, of course, was a factor in that. But I think that when you get that type of player, even for a year, when you're looking to blow things up anyway, it's sort of a no-brainer. But with that being said, Paul George is another example where it was just presumed that he was going to go to LA, he was going to go to the Lakers, which doesn't seem like a very good idea as of late, to say the least, with the way things are going over there.
No, it doesn't.
So then he re-ups with OKC, and now you've got Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and Steven Adams together just because you took this flyer, essentially, that he would want to stick around. And I think that is going to be continue to become a trend more lately. So, yeah, I do think so.
Do you want to check in with Stephen A. Smith real quick and hear what he has to say?
Yeah, always. Always want to hear what he has to say.
Let's just give him like 3 seconds.
I'm not happy about it one bit. I got better things to do.
All right, well, so that's Stephen A. Smith.
Okay.
He's been going for a while.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for joining the show.
He's got better things to do.
Yeah.
I want to flip it over to Golden State real quick before we hit the Suns. It looks like the Warriors just decided, hey, we don't have Kevin Durant. We are a team that won one title without KD, probably should have won the second one, and all of a sudden the main core guys are just going to step up and be that much better. Is there something just in terms of the fundamentals of how they play defense or how their offense is structured that when KD's not out there, not that they're better without Kevin Durant, he's quite possibly the best player in the world, but where they just play differently and it's more effective?
Yeah, because Kevin Durant's entire appeal, even back then when he originally joined the team, is that he's the best isolation scorer in the league.
Yeah.
And the thing that made the Warriors so special offensively is they moved the ball unlike any other offensive team we've really ever seen. Steph and Klay, the spacing with those guys, having a passing big man, quote-unquote, like Draymond, and just the way other players within that system, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, all that passing ability in that team and shooting, you bring in someone like Durant who's going to clog up the offense from time to time. But what we saw was there are both sides to it, in my opinion, because we've seen games where Steph and Klay and Draymond have not had it and Kevin Durant has had to drag them out. But how has he dragged them out? By just isolating and really taking over the games. I think that dynamic and having that to look to when things aren't going well is much more important than having him on the team and having him potentially clog up their rhythm and stuff. I do think that it's an interesting point of timing where Draymond especially is playing the best basketball of his career as Durant got hurt and Steph especially as well catching his rhythm. I do want to think it's more coincidence just because these guys know when to turn it on at this point.
Yeah.
But there's always merit to that argument in my opinion. And there always was. It's like, of course you're going to add Kevin Durant. You're not going to say no to him. But is it going to make things a little bit more difficult? Do you add the chance that this screws things up at least a little bit,
yeah,
to the point where you're not predominant favorites in every single series? Like Houston could have beat them in that series. They definitely could have beat them last year, and that's because they took this chance, and they could have added other players instead. But when you can add a top 3-5 player in the league, you do it, and they're showing why, and I think they're going to show why in the series too if he plays, though. And that's the thing, is we don't really know if he's going to play.
Yeah. Real quick, last one for you. The Phoenix Suns, we haven't really got to talk about their potential draft, and we have a couple weeks certainly to get into it. But, you know, okay, Zion won't be there, Ja Morant won't be there, RJ Barrett won't be there at 6. But if you could have your choice of anybody else in this draft, who are like your 2 or 3 guys you'd be looking at for the Suns right there? Even if a guy's projected to go 4th, let's say he dropped to 6th, who would you like?
I really like Jarrett Culver just based on what I think that they want out of this draft and what they need out of this draft. They have too much youth already and have spent too much time trying to develop that youth already. And I'm not saying Jarrett Culver is a finished product by any means. He's going to come in and be good right away. But he just has so much about his game that is ready right now. His passing is ready right now. His scoring is somewhat ready right now. I wouldn't say he's ready to be like a number one or number two guy on a team by any means. But he can score if you give him the ball. I think that he's just an effective player you put within a system and ask him to do what you would ask any wing to do. And I think that he can do that. That might sound like I'm just simplifying it too much for him, but it's a lot harder to get young guys to do that than you might think. And Suns fans would know from watching Josh Jackson, from watching Dragan Bender, from watching Marquese Chris. I think you can trust him to play good minutes right away. And that's where the juxtaposition is with Darius Garland or Kobe White, is that these are high upside point guards that don't fit in at all to what you're doing right now. Darius Garland is a score first point guard who needs the ball in his hands a lot, and his best skill is shooting off the dribble and scoring for himself. His biggest weakness is playing point guard itself, and that's the same thing with Kobe White. But with that being said, you have a huge need of point guard, and these guys both have high upside. So if you draft them and they pan out, all of a sudden, man, how great are you looking in 2 to 3 years?
Yeah.
But would you rather have the guy like Culver who can help you right now? The counterpoint to him, and a guy like DeAndre Hunter or a guy like Cam Reddish, is okay, where is he going to play? Who are you moving out? Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, Mikal Bridges, Kelly Oubre, you have all these names already. Where are you going to play them? And that's the worst part about them falling to 6, in my opinion, is that if they would have been at 2 or 3, obviously Ja Morant or even RJ Barrett, in my opinion, just too good of a prospect to pass up on. But now it's just a debate of really what's best for you, and I'm not even sure. And I don't know where the Suns stand on that as well.
So now they're in a position where they could mess the pick up. And not to pick on the Suns, but I mean, any team in that spot, obviously at 1, certainly at 2, and probably at 3, there wasn't really a wrong pick. It seemed like it was pretty scripted with what you had to do, and now there's some there's some uncertainty, which hasn't worked well for the Suns in years past.
They're going to try and trade it for sure, but if they can't, and it's really tough to get value for a pick like that, then they're going to have to make a tough choice, yeah.
Kellen Olson, great stuff as always. Yeah, you know what? I'll just say, you're my favorite guest.
Oh, man, really?
I don't think any of the other guests are listening.
You had to say that while Taylor wasn't here, too? Come on.
Yeah, I don't know. She's not here. People listen, though, so people will know. At least I've had people write in and ask for you to come back on the show, and maybe it was you, but or, you know, or maybe relatives of yours, but
are
still.
Are you accusing me of having burner accounts? How dare you?
I'm not accusing. I'm just suggesting anything.
He already accused me of having burner accounts.
You basically admitted you have burner accounts. All right.
Whoa.
Kellen, great stuff as always.
As your favorite guest, thank you. No, Luke.
No,
thank you.
Thank you. We're going to get through this Suns thing together.
Yes.
All right, we come back. We're going to hear from Herm Edwards. It's The Rundown, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back to The Rundown. Luke Lipinski here with you. Mitch Vareldis behind the glass. The Arizona Diamondbacks in action right now. Bottom of the fourth inning. How about Merrill Kelly? Kind of cruising right now. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to mess things up. But bottom of the fourth, 1-0 D-backs in Colorado. Not easy to pitch effectively in Coors Field, especially when it's your number 5 starter on the mound, but he has been effective. Eduardo Escobar has a home run in this game. He hit it in the third inning, and the D-backs have the lead 1-0 on Colorado, trying to go with 3 games above 500 on the season. All right, Herm Edwards. Look, he's on our airwaves a decent amount during the season. He's on with Doug and Wolf every week, but he was on with Burns and Gambo this afternoon to talk about a few different things. I mean, N'Keal Harry going in the first round, going to the Patriots of all teams, but specifically today, Marvin Lewis, another major NFL connection, joining the ASU football program. Here's a good portion of that Herm Edwards interview right now.
Please tell me about Marvin Lewis and how you were able to hire the former Cincinnati Bengals head coach to be a special advisor on your staff at ASU.
Well, we've had this conversation. It's been going on for about a year. And he finally said, I'm aboard. So that's good for us. I think it's good for our program. What Marvin brings to the table, great work ethic, obviously, exceptional skills in organization. He'll serve as an advisor to Sun Devil football program, obviously analyzing film, contributing to the development of our coaching staff. So these are the things that I think for us will help our staff tremendously.
How much did his ties to ASU, you know, Ray Anderson being his agent, his daughter having gone to ASU, living here, having a house in Scottsdale, how much did those ties help him want to take this job here, Herm?
Well, that helps, and I think our relationship, we've had a relationship for over 30 years. You know, this is all, you know, football, and as is in life, is always about relationships and just people that you would like to work with if you get an opportunity. We've never worked together per se, but we've known each other for quite some time. So I just think it's a good fit. And all those things you just said in the beginning obviously helps him. Living here obviously is a big bonus for us.
How important is the consultant advisor role just in college football? I mean, you go in your place right now, you've got Antonio Pierce, who's won a Super Bowl. You got Slocum, who was with the Packers. You got Derek Hagan, 9 years in the NFL. You got Kevin Mowai, Hall of Famer to be. And then you've got Marvin, winning his coach in Bengals history, yourself. I mean, when a kid comes in and you're recruiting a kid and you get to walk him around and he's around all of these, you know, legends of the game, I mean, that's got to be a great sales pitch for a kid and his family.
Well, I think it is, but you also, it still goes back to what we said. This is a pro model, and everything we do is tied in to the next level. You know, we want to educate these guys, make them walk out of here with a degree and then have a chance to play professional football. I would say 90% of all the rosters in college football, that's their dream. You know, that's one of their goals. And I think the more people you have to advise them on what it takes, we can't give them talent. Now we can give them knowledge. And I think if you can give them knowledge of the game and make them understand, you know, what it takes to play at that level, that's very important. You look at our roster this year, we had 8 guys that actually signed pro contracts. 2 were drafted and 6 others are signed as free agents. So, you know, we talked about it and we'll continue to try to improve in those areas.
Herm Edwards, head coach of ASU, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Marvin Lewis hired as a special advisor to Sun Devil football. For you, what is the most important role? And you mentioned a whole bunch that he can do. What is the most important role that Coach Lewis will play for you on a week in, week out, day in, day out basis?
Another set of eyes for me, and his knowledge, and you know, we're pretty familiar with how we coach, and I think that helps. And just any little thing he sees that I can improve on, or something that he brings to the table that he might have done different. I mean, we'll have those conversations daily. We'll look at how we practice. We'll look at all those things that we can get better at as a coaching staff, and that's important. You know, we talk about and tell the players all the time, as you walk in this building is about knowledge, how you can gain knowledge. Well, no different for me or for our coaching staff. We're always searching for knowledge. You have a man here that, as you just said, you know, he's been in the National Football League as a head coach for 16 years. He served 27 years in that league. I served 30 in that league. So I just think there's a lot of conversations we can have together and hopefully can help our program.
Do you bring him on the recruiting trail with you, with the other coaches? Does he take an active role in that when you start going into kids' homes and living rooms?
Well, he's not able to do that.
Oh, he's not? Okay.
No, he's not. He won't be able to do that, obviously. That's against the rules. We're not going to break any rules. But I just think having him around, I think, is going to help us tremendously. I know when I introduced him to the players today, they were excited. Their eyes were like, really? Really? Yeah, really. So it's kind of funny when you watch them.
Yeah, I would think, you know, I mean, how many programs across the country, like Alabama, right? I mean, they've got the consultants and the advisors, but outside of Alabama, is anybody else doing this?
I know this. They don't have as many guys that have been affiliated with pro football. We have 7. And if you go into Ray and you go into Scotty Graham, we've got 9 that have been involved in pro football. So that's a lot of people that have been at that level with a lot of knowledge, which I think is important.
How happy were you to see N'Keal Harry go in the first round with that final pick?
Very happy. And I think he couldn't have went to a better team. And I think sometimes, you know, leaving home is good. And I think him leaving will help him to get through his first year, because it's going to be difficult. It's difficult for a rookie when they walk into a pro camp, regardless if they're a first-round pick, third-round pick, free agent. It's a different world. It's a very competitive world, and that's N'Keal's DNA. But there's a lot of things that'll be different for him as far as the playbook. And that's I think that's unique for him, in the fact that when I arrived here, I actually gave him a pro playbook, and I gave it to him and put it in his hands. I said, this is what you're going to have to learn when you get to the next level. He looked at that thing like, all this? I said, yeah, all this.
Nikhil's in the NFL, and you've got another guy who was a great Sun Devil. He's now with the Cardinals, and Terrell Suggs. Do you reach out to a guy like Terrell? Do you want him around? I mean, he was such a great player here. Have you had those conversations yet?
Not yet, but we will. And Marvin, actually, I think Marvin might have coached him when he was at the Ravens. So, you know, I mean, that's another guy. We love for former players to always come back. They're always welcome here on this campus. Anytime. They're always welcome in this building.
Herm Edwards, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. ASU fans will kill me if I don't ask. They don't kill me. That's a little strong. But they want to know what's going on with your quarterback battle. I know it's kind of the slow time right now, but what is going on with your quarterback battle? Because it's going to be a very interesting conversation later this summer, isn't it?
That's why it's called a battle. We'll know. We'll know 2 weeks, obviously, prior, maybe earlier than that, before our opening day. I think we have to do it that way. But it's been very competitive. And I think all the participants at that position have gotten better. As you guys want to know, our team wants to know, too. I mean, that's just part of it. But that's the uniqueness of it. It's going to be a guy, obviously, that doesn't have a lot of playing experience. And that's okay. We said that. We're going to field a young football team. And I think for the fans, they're going to watch him grow up. They're going to watch this team grow up the next couple of seasons. And I think if we continue to do what we need to do, it's going to be fun to watch.
It is. And the way you've gone about it is just it's competition, right? Nobody's been promised anything. It's just it's open competition. May the best man win.
Yeah, and you know, and I think that's the mindset of our team. They understand that. It's kind of unique, you know, that I don't have to talk about it anymore. And it's kind of ironic. We had a meeting today, and I told him, you know, we have basically 35 more days of what we call running and lifting with our weight coach. And then there's 29 days after that before our first game. And with that, there's 25 practices. And I told him on the 16th of June, there's 40 more players coming in here to compete, 40 more that are going to show up on campus, and they're going to be involved in this offseason thing. And I said, those 40 guys are coming here to compete, just like you guys, and they can compete for playing time.
That's Herm Edwards on with Burns and Gambo this afternoon. Quick update here before we hit the break. D-backs and Rockies now even at one apiece. Two outs, bottom of the fourth. Nolan Arenado is on first. I believe he just walked, right? I looked away when we were... Okay, so Arenado just walked to first. So that's where we are right now. Hour number one of the show in the books. When we come back, we'll get you another update on the D-backs, see if they get out of this inning. Merrill Kelly on the mound. But also, some potentially pretty big decisions Torrey Lovello and Mike Hazen and that front office and coaching staff are going to have to make here. We're about a little over a third of the way into the season. D-backs still hovering above 500, but it's getting tougher. That's next. It's the Rundown. Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.